delicate balance of when to push and when to release pressure. Sometimes you actually are needed to release pressure.
So, and to make them feel safe and warm and connected and that they have all the space in the world. It's the opposite of pushing. So what I've seen is that a lot of students will say to me, so what's the real agenda of this program? You know, and I actually have to stop and think about it honestly to give them an honest answer, but one that wouldn't scare them. And I said, yeah, what is the real agenda of this program? And I was like, I said that every Jew comes out with an ongoing commitment to grow in a Jewish way. And that is the truth. I mean, eventually, Mirat Hashem, that'll be Shomer Mitzvahs, but it's not my job to tell you what your outcome should look like after this program. But my commitment to the program and to you is that you should come out loving your heritage and that you should grow in an organic way and be committed to that growth. And they're like, okay, I've never had one bad reaction to that. Meaning, because that's empowering. And it's that you come out loving something and that you want to grow. Okay. Some of the questions that I ask myself when I'm looking at a student is there an inner drive in the student to grow? Is the student, once they're engaged, is there an organic desire to grow? If there is, you don't need to push. They're already growing, right? So it's like when to push, when not to push. If there's an organic drive and you see they're interested and they're coming to classes and they're asking questions, if there's just a natural interest, I mean, I don't know if this is the right thing. I don't believe you need to push. Like, I think that's the organic process we should be supporting and be there for. So that's one type of student. Another student is the student not engaged, or they're not coming to any classes. So then they might, that's a student that needs a little bit of a push, but be warm and inviting. Invite them, don't push them. If they're not coming, they're not coming because there's other priorities, or they're scared, or they're not sure. Yeah, usually it's a mixture of all three. So just be warm and inviting and create a feeling that they'll want to come to you, some sort of draw. I see people on Facebook, right, you know, my wife bakes the best challah ever and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, whatever level you need to invite them. Is the student engaging but not taking on anything, Lamaisa? They're not actually taking on anything action. There's a lot of students that come to things, enjoy the classes, but they don't move. So these are the students that need a push. And what do I do there? I sit down with them and I'll teach a class that with hashgafa in it about how you have to be in your stretch zone. Like I talk about, you know, your comfort zone, your stress zone, your stretch zone, how the optimal level of growth is to be always with a slight bit of tension. That means it's not comfortable. I teach them about what it means to be growing at your optimal level, that it shouldn't feel like you're just cruising. That's not when we strive to be the best we can be. That's not what it feels like. And then teaching them hashgafa around like masim katanim, baby steps, and that you should always be taking baby steps. The Jews are going up and not down. You know, all this hashgafa, we all know this, right? But I teach them the hashgafa. Once I've taught them hashgafa, whether it be in a class, whether it be one-on-one, and show them, bless you, then I can sit down and go, as we were discussing in the class about stretch zone, that you're like, oh yeah, I really like that class. You're like, yeah, so what's your plan? I've done this so many times, and it works, because it's not me pushing them. It's like now they've learned a concept, they understand it. Okay, so what do you think would be your next step? They're like, oh, I'm not sure. Like, and then we come up with something together as opposed to me pushing them. So that's very useful. You feel like you have a group that are just hovering. It might be useful to put a class in there on a shkafa of that kind of concept. You have to be always moving this, you know, stretch zone, that kind of thing. Okay, is there a question? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I find sometimes more of an issue. What happens when you have someone who's like very excited about it?
Yes.
That's the next
point, 100%. Yeah, that's the other category of student, is when the student's like, I believe, right? Yeah, and this happens a lot at Neve. I worked at Neve for a few years teaching, so we would get the inspired ones who were like, I just want to be from, like, now I can't wait to cover my hair. I'm like, okay, sit down. Right. And I would say to them, you know, you're going too fast. Literally, you're going too fast. Slow down. And, you know, no one's dying to cover their hair. No, I don't say that. But I have the students. So this is another really important one, which comes really into yours, so I don't want to step on it too much.
That's fine.
About, students coming home and then not being able to be normal because they've been in such a heightened state of idealism. I know, I was told recently that's the same issue. I was actually told that. But I sit girls down in Israel and say, you can go to a mixed Shabbos table. It's okay. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. You can talk to a guy at a table. You know, meaning That's what I'm saying. It's where the student is. It's where the student is. And what do they need? Do they need a push? Do they need safety? Do they need a release of pressure? Do they need to be slowed down? This is about understanding people as opposed to a formula or a technique. So I put here the point that you're talking about. Is a student overwhelmed? Are they growing super fast? Are they stressed out about the adjustment even? Like, if a student is stressed about anything they've taken on, my parents are flipping out, I don't know what to do with my uni and my work, and I don't know where the sharpest, I don't think I can... There's no more pushing. There's just like safety, support networks, invite them for Shabbos, like take the pressure off. So it's a push-pull always. Yeah, when you're looking at a student, do they need a bit of a push, or do they need release, or do they need an embrace, basically? Those are the three kind of areas. One more, yeah.
Going back to the inviting topic, what do you say about that, asking credits? Like,
the what, sorry?
Asking credits. You know that concept of like, if you invite them, withdraw. Like if their friends are not coming and therefore they don't want to come or it's not a good time for them and then you ask them again, like, I don't know, in our circles it happens, like, if you invite them a couple times and they say no, then it doesn't look good. So, like, you have to, like...
To them it doesn't look good?
Yeah.
That you go, because you look desperate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like playing hard to get
a So either you could give them a bit of a break and or you could go through another friend. You know, if you know a friend of theirs and ask them to invite them, or give it a break and then go back to them afterwards, or you could flip it and ask them for advice on something or an idea. You know, like, listen, I'm thinking about this. Do you have any ideas about this? I engage my student leaders like that all the time. I'll say, what's your input on this? I'm thinking of doing this. Oh, they love it. All of a sudden, they feel important in a different way. It's got nothing to do with religion. I often find this. I find the religious thing is the defensive thing. So if you can go another way in any other topic, like Bracha was saying, just engage them. Just start discussing, you know, how do you mow your lawn? I don't know, like anything. It suddenly takes... You become a human and become a person. Okay. A rabbi I spoke to recently said, if they feel pushed, you've gone too far. They shouldn't feel pushed, you know, meaning they feel you've pushed them somewhere they didn't want to go. They should get to a point... Sorry, meaning they should be pushed.
Yeah.
Right.
I think in a way you have to.
It's different because they have the connection so much already that they don't feel that they need to take on the action as much. Yeah. They have an emuna. Huh?
Yeah. What if they feel pushed but it's just like their own issues? It really wasn't anything that
you can't. If they feel pushed and then you push, that's it. You've lost them.
You didn't push. They feel pushed.
By what?
If a girl came back from a number program, she basically knows she's from and she doesn't want to be. So now anything we say, if it's not pushing, she feels pushed.
So then I'm going to get there, but you have to address the fear. Really, it's fear,
yeah.
And you have to discuss what's going on with her, just with the feeling, nothing to do with action. So let me get there. The other thing that I'm just going to be very honest. Sometimes, you know, I run a leadership program, I run a Perry program, and I run a SOLD program, which is the one in New York. And sometimes you want to fill your trip. So sometimes I stop there and I'm talking to a student. I'm trying to convince them to come if they need a push. And then I have to stop and say, what's my intention? Is my intention really to fill my trip, or is it really what the student needs? And just being honest in that moment with myself and know that and trust Hashem that really when I'm doing the best thing for the student, he'll help me. And I've had a couple of instances where I realized I was pushing, and when I really checked myself, again, it's about self-awareness. When I checked myself, I realized I just wanted to fill my program. And then when I realized that's not the right place to come from and I let go, so a student recruiter rang me the next day and said, I've got three new names for you. Like, as soon as Hashem helps, just do your best. You just be honest with yourself and just check yourself and just try to say, okay, what does this student need? What does the student need? That's the only question that should be in our heads. And just to check yourself. So two common blocks. Fear and obviously the practical concerns. Like, I've got a job, I've got a whatever. Yeah, one quick.
When you think about what the student needs, like, most of the time they don't think that they need that.
They don't. You're saying, what does this student need? Not what they are aware that they need. They may be aware, they may not be aware. They may not be aware.
What? How would it be bad for them?
What? Because if the extra step is a push rather than a hug, or it's a push rather than release, they could shut down and run away from you. So then you've lost them. Because at all times you're trying to keep the relationship intact. At all times you're trying to keep the... That's why it's hard for Makarvin, because you're playing this double role of trying to keep the relationship intact but then giving them the push. enter the floating Makarv. Like Rabbi Klatsko is the famous floating Makarv role where you can call him up, dial a Klatsko, and he comes to campus and you give him a list of names and a list of programs you want them on and you just make meetings with him. You say, oh, this big director is coming in. Do you want to make a meeting with him? And you sit him there for 10 hours, and then line him up. And he literally, I think they call it a closer. He closes, boom, 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 boom. And then I found that I can do this too because I'm not based in a campus. I can just float in and Makarv, when they make the most of it, they can do it. Really works well together behind the scenes. So that's a different role because you can be more direct without having to risk the relationship. Okay, fear. Let me just get to fear because I know I'm running out of time. It depends if they're aware of their fear or not aware of their fear. So if they're aware that I'm just scared. You know, you see the back and front. You see Yaakov wrestling the angel. Yeah, a lot. And the soul is like, I want it now when they hear an idea in a class. But then the body's like, oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. This is no. I like my life. And then the soul's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Whoa, I don't know about this. And then I teach a class where I do this and every student is cracking up because they all feel this. I mean, we have two different realities going on. So if they're aware of it, we'll discuss about the fear and what their fears are and go through the fears. What are your fears? So you have to unpack the fear. A lot of the fear is that I don't want to become religious. It's got like meaning something's going to happen to me. So there's going to be some force that's going to overcome me and I'm going to be overwhelmed by it and become religious against my will. That's a lot of the resistance. Well, that's one of the things I hear a lot. And I just tell them that Judaism doesn't believe in force and guilt trips. That's not Judaism. And Judaism believes very much in free will. And if you ever decide to bring in Judaism into your life, it will be because you choose it, because you want it, because you value it. That's the only place it has to come from and should come from. That's healthy. And then I offer to be their spiritual bodyguard. And they love this. All of a sudden you become an advocate for them and not an enemy and not an adversary. I'll say, I will be your spiritual bodyguard. If you feel at all pushed by anything outside of you that you should become something you don't want to, call me and I will be a bodyguard for you. They're going, really? And I'm like, all of a sudden, I become a support for them, right? Which is true. Like, they want to go. They're just terrified. So take the pressure off and say, no, you have to choose this. It has to be your choice. Yeah, but you should know that nothing's going to happen to you. That's very important to empower them with their own free will. And I see that that's often, that can be lost and people do lose themselves. Bless you. Does that make sense? It's a very big topic. I'm just kind of running through them here. Okay, I debunk words immediately like religious and orthodox. I actually personally don't like them either because I grew up completely not religious at all and these words were loaded. And they're just loaded. They're loaded words that mean very negative emotional connotations, as you all know. You all know this, right? Religious, you know, fanatical, extreme, out of the world, divisive, judgmental, yeah, weird, archaic, all these things. So I get rid of those and I say, I paint a safe picture for them. You paint a safe picture for them. So we're all Jews on a map. There's a Torah and there's Jews and you're just at some point keeping whatever level of the Torah you keep. 150 years ago, there was no such thing as all the labels. They talk about Reform, Conservative, Orthodox. There was no such thing as these labels 200 years ago. There's just Jews and the Torah. You're keeping at whatever level of the Torah. Just come from that place. They're like, oh yeah, I can handle that. Right? Meaning they don't want to be boxed in. They don't know what they're getting themselves in for. So just create a safe place for them. I talk about the word religious, that when do you become religious? I don't know, I'm still trying. You know, like, what does it look like to become religious? Many, many families have a lot of Torah inside of them, and they don't know it's Torah, and they don't know it's religious, but it's religion, it's Judaism. So when do you become religious? It doesn't make sense. So, like, let's get rid of that word. You know, these are just the typical things I've heard hundreds of times that that come up and how to deal with them. Okay, as far as like closing, a question that's useful is what would need to happen for this not to be a stress for you? Yeah, if it's about going to Israel, going to yeshiva, going to seminary, taking the next step, what would need to happen for this not to be a stress for you? One thing that's very important is to never take responsibility for their decision. Meaning never, because it could lead to resentment. Support them and tell them this is your decision. I'll support you no matter what. I just want you to think about it. But don't. They shouldn't walk away feeling like you really pushed them into that. That's really the feeling you're wanting to avoid. It should be their decision. I'll support you. This is your decision. You take time to think about it. I'm here for you. And that you can do that at the end after the pushing. You can push, but then at the end of the day say, but it's your decision, I will support you. I really mean it. You have to mean it. You can't say that and say, then I'm not, you know, they feel something from you. You have to be very much there for them. Parents is a huge one. Don't be scared to have a coffee with a parent. I've done it many times. Dunkin' Donuts. It's a bit scary, but it depends, obviously, if they're really vicious and fierce, so I don't know. But generally, parents are just terrified they're going to lose the children, and they want to see who's behind that. So if I show up a normal and go, hi, you know, they don't feel threatened. And they definitely don't feel threatened as much by a woman. And so often, especially meeting with mum. So I've gone to meet with mum many times and say that, you know, the agenda is just to educate your children about Judaism. However, one of the things that is very useful to say is, and I say this immediately, very sincerely, that, oh, I can see now why your daughter is so special, because everything she is because of you. And all of a sudden there's a connection there where they felt there was a division and they feel very happy. Like, really? Like, oh, you know, meaning it's because of the values you gave her that she can appreciate this and have the sensitivity towards Judaism. And so all of a sudden I feel a connection to this thing as opposed to being an enemy. Yeah.
I'm actually right now texting one of our JSL students whose parents are extremely anti-everything that she's doing, getting involved with, and she wants to extend after JSL, and she's like really not sure, like, how honest and how forthcoming she should be with her parents. And she knows that they don't want anything to do with it. They don't want her to, like, go any longer than she has to be there for.
Oh, meaning to tell them whether they should extend?
She wants to extend, say, after JSL. Like, at the end, like, wondering what's the line in terms of, like, I should tell what they're being. I don't know.
We'll have to talk about case by case with depending on a lot of factors. We'll talk. There's no formula. We'll talk about it. Yeah.
What about the concept of, like, my parents disapprove. I'm with you. I want to grow. I want to go. Oh my goodness, I still want to go to Israel. But my parents disapprove. My parents don't want me to. And the parents won't come meet you. Let's say, like, you can't have that. Like, how much? How safe is it then to push a student potentially away from their parents?
So it depends how old they are. If they're a freshman, I wouldn't do it. If they're about to graduate and move to another city and they've got a certain independence, it depends on the how strongly the student feels about it. It depends on if this is going to create absolute war. I mean, I would take it maybe to a Rav if it was a real Shaila. It depends on the situation. I don't think there's a formula. But sometimes I've encouraged. And I've seen it was actually the exact time the student needed to own their own independence, you know, and stand up in a way and own their own process, and it was very healthy for them. And there's other times where I could see it was just not the right thing. It would have been too damaging to the student. So it's what will be best for the student? Meaning, is it going to shift the student and help them really grow, or is it going to create so much stress in the student's life that it's going to pull them down in general? They won't even be able to grow at all.
That's a beautiful formula. Right.
Yeah, that's
so you did give a formula.
Oh, that's a formula. Okay. Okay. All right. I know I'm not over. And you can also coach students how to reassure their parents that you're not going to lose me, and I'm always going to be here for you, Mum, and I appreciate everything that you've given me as far as the values, and at the right time in the right way. That also is very helpful. Okay. I think that's the nutshell. Yeah.
I have some girls that I live with that I learn consistently with, and they've gone through MIMO 1. They're almost done with MIMO 2. And some are philosophy majors. And they feel they're growing in their knowledge, but I don't know how to move them along really in just growing in terms of mitzvah, you know, taking on mitzvah. Mm-hmm. And
can you give them a class on how inspiration without action is meaningless?
I think they've heard it, but I mean, it's just more like they're very comfortable where they are. It's a very fine line. You know, they have a very good background. They like coming. They like learning. They like the classes, but they're just very fine where they are.
Right. So either you would have to do that one-on-one with a student you felt you had a good relationship. You can only move them.
I learn with them one-on-one also.
Right. And you have to sit down with them and say, you know, so I would revisit the topic, because then you can use the piece of learning as a discussion piece to apply. Learning always has to go into application. So that's the only way you could kind of open a conversation that felt relevant and then say. Yeah. Or a comfort zone or something related to that. That's what I do. I mean, I don't try and do any other tricks. It's like I just.
I'm gonna add something.
Yeah, add.
With the one-on-ones, it's really important. One of your jobs is to uncover their needs, their unsatisfied needs, figure out what their issue is. Everyone has a problem. They're at the part in the decision-making cycle of satisfied. Everything's great. And you want to get them to the part of the cycle where they acknowledge that there are problems. The only way you could do that is if you have a sincere, beautiful discussion where you are listening deeply and you are questioning them and you get closer and closer and you figure out what are the issues in their life. And where you want them to get to move is, forget Judaism, but let's try to examine how do we have a more emotionally healthy life? How do we work it out that we don't have a screaming and yelling in the house? Let's go to Israel, and there we'll go study families. You know, or let me introduce you to come over to me for Friday night dinner, or I want you to meet so-and-so. So number one, you have to get very deeply close and know what their issues are. That's number one. And number two, you have to orchestrate that they're peers doing things together. We're having a sleepover at my house, and it's comfortable. I wouldn't agree so much, or maybe I don't work with people that are where it's the, you know, we have to discuss change, and it's more of a, let's have a good time. Right. Sleepover, and we'll play apples to apples, and there'll be guys there, and there'll be girls there, and before you know it, you're keeping Shabbos. I would do it, it's fun, it's wonderful, it's comfortable, it's also intelligent, and little by little, that's how people become from. So you're getting really deep, really close, you're uncovering what their needs are, their psychological needs, and they all have it. And that's how this girl, she was totally not religious, I lived with her for like 2 years, and then it was psychology sessions and getting close and loving. I do anything for her and I accept her. And a lot of girls came from that way through the discussions that we were having, which were deep, and I self-disclosed and brought them into my life and made sure they had friends. I orchestrated, if you do all this and you make it fun to keep Shabbos and not like it's some kind of dramatic thing, going to Israel should not be dramatic. So worst comes to worst, you won't eat at a kosher restaurant. Plenty of great kosher restaurants. You make it light, it's not always, you know, what would happen if Friday night you didn't go out? All right. It's not such a big, I make it, it has to work for them. It has to be pleasant for them. That's what I, and I would ask you what you know about each of these girls, one by one by one. What's the story with each one? You know, if you're getting, you're doing kishka talk, you know?
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
You were describing a very rational fear when somebody wants to embrace but is resistant to change. But what happens when you encounter anxiety, underlying anxiety issues that now like come to the forefront and there's all these details and they keep saying them right too quickly, but they haven't done anything. They're just so overwhelmed by the fact that there's going to be like guidelines and I don't know, maybe like they have a mild OCD also then just like an anxiety because of the very, very stressed out experience.
Right. So if it's a mental health issue, it's important to assess for that. I think you're having a whole session tomorrow on that. But that's
someone who's being helped.
Someone who's being helped. So you have to go slow. You have to go slow. You have to be very reassuring. There's no quick trick with anxiety. But I think twice, depending on like what Esther Wien was talking about having a kli to be able to makabel. If they don't have a kli, then you know, and they're not able to, it's not going to be good for them. I'm not sure.
I try to point out, like someone says to me, I try to show her, this is not a religiosity issue. You see, feel this way about babysitting and doing your school.
Right.
It's just like
right.
You're having anxiety. It's a part that you don't get a negative feeling.
Right. That's important. Right. It's more complex. Okay, so I think I'm done. I just want to say Avi Cassell just said I should mention SOLD because I don't work on any campuses. But SOLD is a young professionals women's only program in New York. So if you have any alumni graduating, moving to New York for their careers and they need Jewish connection, if they've been on a trip, Maimonides up to a year in SEM, they're right for SOLD. And Alenia Bragamov's here also, who is the Rebbetzin for SOLD. She's amazing. They love her. And we found a number of Soul girls now live in the Passaic house, so it's a beautiful dual thing together. and that works very, very well. And we're trying to create a sense of a really lahavdil, but a frum sorority, where they feel a sense of home and they feel they do Shabbos together, they do Shabbos at each other's houses. It's really building into something that can be something real. We have to find the girls. And the last one was I run a leadership program. A leadership program is for real leaders, not leadership called Kiruv. Leadership meaning they've committed already to a leadership position, student boards, student organizations on campus. You have a connection with them. They've done one of your Israel trips of some sort, and then they're willing to commit to you back in your communities, a young professional also, and on campus. And we inspire them. Rabbi Tax comes every day for the whole time as a scholar in residence. This is his third year with us. And we take them to real leaders. They get really inspired. We focus on campus, what they can do for the campus or community to help expand. Student recruitment is an untapped resource. Chabad has totally hopped it, and we haven't hopped it at all yet. And I think we're getting there. But I think there's a lot more to be done with student recruitment. We'll talk more about that tomorrow in the session on maximizing Israel trips. But this is really to empower students who are already student leaders and then send them back to you inspired and wanting to help you and committing to two semesters, and we give them seed money and a graphic designer, and they're all part of an international group of leaders. There's leaders from South America, UK, Canada, Australia, and they feel so excited to be part of an international group together, and that keeps them accountable. So a lot of times the criticism is, student recruitment doesn't really work. There's students, they fall through. When you have part of a group you belong to that's international, you feel a bit more like, I want to report that I'm doing something. And we found that it really bears fruit if the right students are chosen. I mean, that's half the battle, but that's just wanted to throw that out there. JewishStudentLeaders.com is the website. So, yeah, that's about it. Thank you.
So JET is what I like to call full-service care of organization. From the beginning to now, lots of married couples living in West Rogers Park. And how do we help them integrate into the community? This is what I was asked to speak about. I had a lot to say on both of these things, and you probably don't know me very well, but I was very proud of myself that I did not interject once. Took tremendous self-control. Anyway, maybe I'm a little tired also. But so, you know, the goal is, as has been stated, so I just want to tell a little anecdote. Many, many years ago, about 20, probably around 25 years ago, I was sort of sent as an ambassador to different homes on Shabbos to sort of, you know, show what a person's support could do to help a person who knows nothing about Judaism become somewhat of a literate Jew. And one time I was sitting at this person's table, and I suddenly became a very wealthy family, very European and proper, and an enormous house, and not like me, this California girl who kind of just says whatever is on her mind. And I was sitting at this table, and I became very overwhelmed, and I all of a sudden I said, how will I ever repay all the people who've been so good to me and so kind? So this man said, you'll never be able to. He said, but someday you'll get married and you'll have your own home and you'll be able to give back. And I feel a little bit like that's what we're doing with JET. We're giving back to the Klal, not just first and foremost by raising my family, which is my priority, but secondly, helping other young people learn a little bit about Judaism. So we want them to know about Judaism, and then they learn, and then they go on these amazing trips, and a lot of them decide they want to keep the mitzvahs, and then they eventually get married, and they move into the neighborhood where their rabbis and the families they've become close to live. And it's not so easy. You have to learn a whole new language. You have to learn all new social cues. You have to learn a completely different standard of what's considered an appropriate way to spend your money. how you dress, and just basically everything about your life changes. I sometimes tell them it's like being dropped into the middle of Korea and left there by yourself. Like, how would you manage? And so I feel like that's sort of what we're here to do. We try to help them. And since the inception of our organization, now I think it's just over 8 years, we've gone from just, you know, kind of the beginning with the students to now having these couples where as they're growing and moving into the community and finding their place, the challenges have changed. So I'm going to share some of the challenges. They can come home from a trip, and one girl came home. She's a little bit of an extreme girl, but she came home from a trip, and she's religious, and she went to her mother and told her she had to put on a shetel, or she was going to go to Gehenna. And so how to, you know, they need, some of them need a lot of guidance how to behave normally with their families. They're just really extreme. They, you know, we have a boy coming back from yeshiva tomorrow who's grown tremendously in the last 2 years in yeshiva, but in the beginning when he was keeping kosher, it was World War III in his house. He refused to sit at the table with his parents. He would call them all sorts of names because they weren't eating kosher food. He would give them all sorts of dire predictions of what their future in the world to come would be. And it did not, I said to him over and over again that the person who becomes religious is or changes is, you're the one that has to behave properly. But it was 2 years in yeshiva. The first year did a lot, but it was the second year that really sort of solidified him and helped. He's much more well thought out young man than he was when he went. And a lot of it just was it took time for him to integrate what he was learning and to understand that he still has to live with these people and they're his parents and he has to respect them. So part of it is dealing with parents. We have parents over all the time. His parents were the scariest ones I ever hosted. I was very, very frightened to host them. I served a roast, which I never do on Friday night. And and it actually worked out really well. As we hear a lot of Siyata Dishmaya stories, but it happened to be my husband had gone to a certain event where they ate. Do you ever read about those guys that find interesting animals to see if they can be shechted or whatever? So they had a fancy event in Chicago, and my husband had the menu, and it was all about interesting animals that they had served. And this particular father found that fascinating. So, you know, I think if you're trying to do the right thing, it'll work. So one is definitely, I believe, helping the students, first of all, behave normally as a religious person, and that they're sort of an ambassador for Judaism, and they have to not be strange. And then secondly, helping them feel comfortable in the frum community. After the first few couples got engaged, and I had sent them out into the community to be, to take challah classes, they kept calling me, and I realized that I was going to have to learn to be a challah teacher. I found it very, very frightening. I didn't feel that I was up to it. I revere my challah teacher, and to this day, I have a very close relationship with her. But I asked my teachers, and I was told that I should learn how to do it. And so I've been doing that. I teach every year at least 10, if not more, challahs, most of whom are not really religious. But with the ones who are from, it's important for them as they have become from, they've moved into the community, to really understand what it means to bring a child into Klal Yisrael, and to, you know, there's so many things to navigate. So we went from being a college teacher and having young couples learning all about things, you know, husbands who don't know how to make kiddush very well and things like that, to having parenting courses, which is something we just started. And I think the girls don't necessarily understand, you know, what it means to raise a family. They've gone to families, they've seen so many children in these homes, and then they have their babies and they're really falling apart. So once your students have become religious, even the ones that haven't, but once they have their families, you have to be there to help them, you know, understand what, you know, they come into your house, the house is clean for Shabbos, okay? Your kids are dressed in their Shabbos clothes. And they don't really understand what a normal family looks like just on a regular day. They don't know that there are such things as dirty diapers and people who throw up on the floor and, you know, food that gets burned and people who spill things all over the place. And they have these, you know, and then when that happens in their house, okay, or their husbands come home grumpy, they feel like a failure. And I think you have to do them a service of teaching them by having them in your homes as much as possible or in other people's homes, the realities of living a Jewish life, that it's not perfect, it's normal. Children are not perfect, life is not perfect, and the Torah is perfect and Hashem is perfect, but people aren't, and so it's okay if their lives are a little bit chaotic sometimes. That's normal. Sometimes, I think Jackie touched on this, sometimes you have to step back when one of your students becomes religious and joins a community, you have to step back and not and allow them to find their own place. We like how we live, and they come to us a lot, and then when they choose to live a little differently, okay, or they choose to switch seminaries, several girls have switched to seminaries, you know, let's say I got an email this week, a girl switched to Mayanot. So I have to really step back and say, am I here to help people connect to Hashem, or am I here to produce products that are a reflection of me? So if I'm just the facilitator. That's actually my new moniker on LinkedIn, executive facilitator. I'm just there to sort of help them find their way. And I think if you are honest and you don't have an agenda, I have a pet peeve of mine is I don't like to say that I was makar of a person or our organization was makar. So a person makes their own choices and decisions. And they choose to keep the mitzvahs. You're there to set an example, to help them learn and grow, to give them resources. But in the end of the day, they're going to decide. And it keeps me from feeling proud. The last thing I'll add is that I think it's very important to make use of the infrastructure in a community. So if you're out on campus somewhere, once you have a person who's become more interested or more committed, make sure they have opportunities, either formally in a Shabbaton or whatever, that they can see what community life is like, that they have an understanding that that whatever happens on campus is, they like to call the campus their community, which is true, I guess, but it's a lot different. Campus life is a lot different than living in a regular frum neighborhood. And, you know, I'm not sure when is the right time to tell them how much tuition is, you know, what it actually feels like to be pregnant, you know, for those, you send them to families and they have 10 kids or four, you know, like, she, you know. I remember when my sister was first pregnant, she said, nobody told me it was like this. She was really mad. She said, yeah. It's not, but people have like one or two kids, you know, like, and they schedule their deliveries. It's a whole different. I think the integrating them into the community also is just sort of helping them meld their worlds. That there's shalom with the parents, and that that they. A lot of times their family will follow to a certain extent. You really never know if they're going to, if things are handled well. I think that one last thing, all of us who've been involved in any sort of education for enough time have seen people who became religious and then at a certain point decided not to be religious and often left families and left a lot of shattered people, okay? So what exactly... Why does that happen? I don't really know, but I think that Jackie was sort of intimating that a large part of our job is our intuition and just using our seichel. And really, you know, I think if you're going to do well in this field, you have to have a push for people. You have to just get people. You have to really try to understand them. You have to really, really care. You have to want to do what's best for them, which is sometimes hard because you might have an agenda, like, I really want her to go learn in this certain place, or I really want her to go on this trip, or I really want them to like this family that I'm sending them to. But in the end, that's just not what works for them. And if you want to help them grow and sort of become healthy Jews in the Jewish community, you know, you have to focus on what's best for them. I think that... I'm going to stop with that because I'm tired. Yeah.
I like the last thing that you touched upon is integrating them to the community.
Yeah.
That's what they need to see, that it's not just you doing it, it's lots of other people.
Okay, so I didn't say that. So
you may want to also mention that Shabbat.com is a great place to find.
So Shabbat.com.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about this. One of my main roles in our organization is I do the Shabbos placements every week. So what does that mean? So Champaign is one of our campuses, so they do their own thing because they don't have families that they send people to. They all come to them. But in Chicago, whoever's coming for Shabbos that week gets put up on a Google Doc. And then I place them with different families. Okay, I place them where they're sleeping. So a typical Shabbos for Jed will be 20 to 80 people. That's a usual, like, coming to the commute for Shabbos. Okay. Now, sometimes I'm really stuck. Like, I have a lot of people on my list, and I like to make shidduchim, put the right kind of personality with the right family or whatever. But I'll go to Shabbat.com, and I'll say, oh, yeah, I haven't tried that person for a while. Or let's say I don't know them. It's a new young couple in town. So I'll call them up, and I'll just speak to them. I'll do, like, a little phone interview and see what they're like and get a sense of, you know, what kind of student, and I'll just say, would you like a student this week? Okay? We've rarely had bad experiences sending students to families. And that way, you know, one of the great things about being a Baal Teshuva is you get to see so many different ways that Shabbos is observed, all the commonalities, but then there's always these little nuances, and it's very, very nice. And, you know, that's why I said, if you're on a campus somewhere, make sure your students get to see what, obviously through Shabbat.com.
But just, anyway, that's
and,
good,
yeah,
but if
yeah,
you don't know of another way, it's a good idea.
Right. And it is. And I use it for myself. And sometimes we don't have any.
I use it for myself when I can't find those.
Yeah. When we don't have enough guests.
I'm serious.
If we have less than a certain number of guests, I'll go on Shabbat.com and I'll start inviting. Like, I'll invite like 100 people. And usually some of them, like two or three, not everybody will. They don't all come, obviously, but two or three people will respond. And we meet new people that way. I've done this kind of canvassing. It's hard. But on Shabbat.com, it's, you know, they already have shown an interest. So
they signed up, didn't they?
They signed up for it, even though the rabbi made them, but still.
They can always unsubscribe if they really don't want to be there.
They like it. And I also use Shabbat.com for shidduchim sometimes.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, which is my favorite hobby, if anyone wants to talk about that later. Yeah.
I'd like to say something about Shani Klatsko. Because when you were talking about throwing up, one time, I'm sure she remembers, she was taking a bunch of students when the Klatskos worked with Jan from Big Bear. They were traveling back to Los Angeles.
Down those windy roads.
Yes, down those winding roads. So she was busy worrying about the windy road, and three of her children threw up. And there were students in the car. And those students came to me and said, we have never seen a person so patient and so keeping it together, even though she was driving, and there were kids were throwing up. And they were incredibly impressed.
I'll just add two quick points. I think that, just this handing off thing that I know Rabbi Cassell alluded to upstairs a little bit with the campus group about not being scared to hand off. And I think that that's really important. And I know that there's a bunch of McLaren got together in New York recently also to discuss how to collaborate. And I just feel so much that, I know this is going to sound cheesy, but just like Hashem wants us to work together, and that with the Achdus we bring so much more impact and so much more bracha, and just trusting each other. And in a way, I felt like it just occurred to me today that maybe this is an idea I'm sure has been thought of, but that it would be great to do some sort of like, you know, we're going to do a proactive networking, and this is what this conference is about, just to get to know each other. And someone was saying before that, that, you know, it feels so different just connecting with everyone in the field and just feeling like we're in it together. And I think that this is crucial. I want to thank Aliza and everyone also for bringing this together, because it's really crucial. It's crucial. And I feel that while we're talking about all these techniques and everything, really what it is also working together and feeling that... That when we can hand our students off to other people as they move through and onwards. And the other thing I was just thinking about, I'm sorry, what was your name?
Tamara.
What Tamara brought up before, I was just thinking about your question about what do I do with students who aren't moving at all. And I just remember something Rabbi Kellerman once said to me, which was, he said, it's like a triage, and you have a limited time of your day, and you have so many students you can access, and you have to triage. And so he says, I said, so who do I triage? The ones who are like, look like comatose, and I'm like, you know, clear, you know, or do I run up to people who are alive and like help them who are like just limping? And he says, no, he says, you go to the people that you have the biggest connection with, and that through that connection, they're the ones you can move. And the ones who are comatose, who are basically gone, you just leave them. You only have a certain amount of time. And you go to the ones you can revive the quickest. And that the way you do that is through your relationship. So if someone's not moving and you keep trying to resuscitate, then move on. I hate to say it sounds terrible, but you have to. You have to get the ones who can. So if you're trying and they're not moving, I would say triage. Focus on people who can.
I would say that you have to be careful. On one hand, I agree with her 100%. You have to be careful. We've had students who, over the long haul, they might not have been ready then. Doesn't mean you have to learn with them once a week, but you keep involved with them and you swoop down when there's a program or something where you want to try to get them to come.
Don't give up, but just...
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you do have to give up, but sometimes
there are
people who have potential, but right now they have to wait through, they go to the Candyland of college, or they have to, or something happens, or a boyfriend breaks, or you have to, you could still keep them on the back burner. There are a lot of people like that. And I also would like to say about this floating outreach, having someone else close the deal, you can't always have another rabbi who lives across the country or Jackie come and close the deal. You have to learn how to close the deal. A lot of times people have a discomfort of being, they call it confrontational or aggressive. There is nothing wrong with influencing another person to make a decision. That's what you do with your children. That's what you do as a teacher. It's a very noble calling. You have to know how to do it. But it's okay to do the uncomfortable probing and the uncomfortable questions to get a student to go to Israel. And very often, or to go on a trip, very often the rabbi is just nervous to do it and uncomfortable to do it. But you can do it, and you can't wait for someone to fly in. I think a lot more kids could go on Israel trips. We would have a session on how do you seal the deal? How do you ask the questions that lead them to uncover the problems in their lives? I think that's an important point.
What does it mean
to seal
the deal? You do have time that people came and outside back up. Many people out, and out of those 20 people, one went on the trip. How many people back out?
You should know. I'm reading a book called Changing Minds. It's a very good book, and it talks about when you seal the deal, when someone makes a decision, there's almost always buyer's remorse. They will reconsider, and I've seen many rabbis lose kids because they didn't go through the whole process. They didn't make sure. Like, I just met with a girl, actually a freshman, and her mother did not want her to come on the trip. Her mother's a nut. She knows her mother's a nut. Her father's an Episcopalian priest, and her sister is getting married on January 12th to a born-again Christian. The mother is very upset, and she wants her to be there. Our trip is December 17th through January 1st. So the mother wanted her to be home and be involved. And I said to her, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but this trip is a trip of a lifetime. And if you'll be a trip ambassador, you want to sell the trip, how could you sell it if you don't go? When you go home, will you help taste the cake? What will you do? Is it more holding your mom's hand? You have to decide. And so we talked about it, and it was Monday. I said, let's meet on Wednesday. Let's see what happened with your mom. and then she's coming on the trip. But the point is that you have to make a process. Buyer's remorse, reconsideration. You have to make sure that that kid bought the ticket, made the application. I've seen a lot of kids lost that way because no one just kind of tied up the process.
Well, they don't want to say no to the rabbi who consulted because they see he has a lot of experience and he's so sure of himself, but their local campus rabbi,
Well, you could also do what I will tell students to do is, you know what, let's meet on Wednesday and I'm going to have a student who did the trip come here. So they'll hear from other students also. You know, and sometimes they will decide. I met with a girl named Megan Corey, also a freshman. She said, oh, well, I have to do a language requirement. I said, listen, why don't you think about it? So if there's any other way you could take your language requirement a different day, think about it. We'll meet on Tuesday. And maybe there's something, because this trip is like, no one's going to knock on your door. When you're an adult, no one offers me trips. You know, you make it a very, very exciting. And she came. But you have to make it a process also.
Great. Thank you very much.
But you're all getting up. You don't get to go anywhere. Sorry.
We're so not done. Now it's time for a proactive networking.
Right. And after proactive networking, there's going to be sushi and schmoozing. We're starving.
All night party. I want to.